Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, under Public Affairs, and on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Today is January 8th, 2025. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing up at 42,635, the NASDAQ down at 19,478, and the S&P up at 5,918. Tonight, I'm talking about planning for the new year. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls and take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy, and they'll write it down and bring it into the studio. If you have questions outside of this, you could also email those at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy. Tonight, planning for the new year with some key words. And what do I mean by key words? Well, there are some changes coming for 2025 that could impact certain individuals. So I'm going to be highlighting a few of those. One is Social Security. The Social Security Fairness Act was just signed into law by President Biden on January 5th. So I'm going to give you some highlights of what that means. Talk about some catch-up contributions, exemptions. What do I mean by that? Retirement accounts, health savings accounts. And so I'll get into that in a moment. I do want to mention that I have been getting some questions about how long do you have to keep documents? I guess people must think, okay, it's a new year. It's part of our new year discussion tonight, planning for the new year. So it kind of corresponds, makes sense. About how long do we have to keep documents? And generally what I tell people, I mean, I frankly have tax returns going way back. But I'm an accountant, I'm a CPA, and I just, you know, you feel like you're it's like a personal memento for you. But for most people, you probably could get rid of some of those old tax returns and certainly old documents. Quite often I'll find out that people have kept things like utility bills. And, you know, back in the day when we would talk about like buying a home or selling a home, people would say, oh, you want to show your utility bills in case you sell the house. Someone might ask that question, what are your typical utility bills? Well, you don't need 50 years of utility bills. So you definitely can get rid of all of those kinds of things. You know, if you want to keep it for a year just for comparison purposes, there's just certain things that makes sense. But, you know, further back than that, you definitely don't need to keep. So you could shred things like your utility bills. Now, let me put a little asterisk on that. Of course, if you have a rental property, for example, you may want to keep those kinds of receipts longer because the IRS can go back and look at your tax returns, typically 3 years. So you definitely would want to keep copies of your tax returns from 3 years and what I would say the supporting documents for those returns for 3 years. Where you might have to keep some other information or supporting information longer than that might be something like this. If you had a large loss on a sale of something, maybe 10 years ago, and you have a capital loss that you're carrying forward each year because you're not using up, you know, all of that loss against gains, and it just keeps carrying forward until you use it, and you still haven't used it, and it was a loss generated 10 years before, you will want to keep your documentation for that, because I have seen where the IRS will say, hey, where is this capital loss coming from? And do you have the documentation to prove it from then? So you do want to keep that type of thing. The other thing you might want to keep is documentation to cost basis. If you had stock that you might hold individually and it was bought pre-2012, for example, then there may not be a tracking system for that cost basis. We have all become very accustomed to seeing on statements now the cost basis for positions that we've held, you know, equities that we buy or mutual funds, ETFs, whatever it might be. We see that now because that is a requirement now that custodians track that cost basis for us. Even when we transfer those positions to a new firm, the cost basis has to transfer as well. But for pre-2012, they did not have to track that. This is what we call non-covered lots, non-covered positions. And sometimes the custodians might still have that cost basis information and provide it to you, but they're not providing it to the IRS. So that's good to know. But there could be even positions where the custodian didn't even track it. You might have had, you know, employer shares through an employer stock purchase plan or through stock options that you acquired many years before and no one was tracking it and you really were responsible for that. Then if you have records to that, you know, to document the cost basis on those shares, you're definitely going to want to keep that as well. So be careful before you start throwing out everything, particularly if you had that support in your tax file or your tax folder. So it wouldn't hurt probably to kind of glance through that if you think you are someone who is in that position. I see this quite often with anyone who worked for any of the companies that ended up being Baby Bells. So we could have gone back to like Westinghouse, GE, you know, AT&T, any Baby Bells. Quite often, those are harder to find the cost basis for because employees might have had them, and then there have been so many changes to all of those companies. Now, granted, if you are someone who cannot find that information, maybe you're holding out on, you know, selling it because you don't know what the cost basis is. There are other ways to find that, so I'll throw that out there. And there are other ways to dispose of that stock. If you're, for example, charitably inclined, you could earmark some of the shares that you don't know the cost basis for, especially if it's a company you don't really want to hold anymore. You just kept it because you didn't know what the cost was. You could always make those as a charitable donation. You know, you contribute your appreciated securities to a nonprofit. That's another way to kind of get out from having to hold it or keep track of the basis. But there is some cost basis software out there that I've used for a number of clients. As long as I have some original, you know, documentation for some shares or time period, it works out, you know, fairly well. So keep that kind of information. So utilities, you could destroy tax returns maybe more than 3 years unless there's documentation that is from a prior period that is still showing up in your tax return. Businesses, I'm a little bit more shy about. You know, the IRS can go back further than 3 years. I mentioned 3 years, but they can go further back. If they suspect negligence or fraud, they could go back 6 years, I think, for negligence and maybe indefinitely for fraud. So if you think you're someone who might be exposed that way, you might also want to keep your records a little bit longer. So always a good habit to go through statements and tax records. Speaking of statements, you might have brokerage accounts where you have you know, funds with a custodian, whether it's IRAs, Roth IRAs, or just regular investment accounts. And I've had clients who keep a notebook. And if they still get paper statements and they keep them, and then when the new month comes, they get rid of the old month, you know, January 2024, they get rid of, and then they keep the January of 2025 statement. Quite often, the custodians will have those records available to you as well if you needed to look at them. Sometimes I'll tell people, we'll keep a December statement and, you know, use that as reference. You could keep December of 2022, 23, 24, and maybe get rid of the intervening statements. But typically, your custodian will also have copies of those if needed or eligible. Or if you have online access, sometimes you can go back, you know, 48 months, 36 months. So you may not have to keep all of that paper All right. So we are talking about planning for the new year. I'm going to highlight some key words that we want to pay attention to that you may be impacted by. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. I've been out for a couple weeks, so welcome back, everyone. Happy New Year. I didn't say that, so Happy New Year to our listeners. We are talking about planning for the new year. I think this is something that doesn't impact a lot of people, but I want to mention it because it could impact people you know, it could impact you, and it could make a big difference. So let me try to explain this. When I said keywords, Social Security, on January 5th, President Biden signed into law the Social Security Fairness Act, eliminating the WEP and GPO for clients who worked in jobs not covered by Social Security. So first, let me tell you what that is and what that all means, because for most people, it probably doesn't apply, but it could be critical for those where it might, which is typically people who are in public service. It could be police officers, I think even military, teachers, that type of thing. Teachers from way back when they weren't paying into Social Security. So the WP is the windfall elimination provision, and the GPO is the government pension offset. These are two things that when people were working many, many years ago and not paying into Social Security because perhaps they worked a government job or a public duty job where they were going to be covered by a pension or a government pension, then they weren't paying into Social Security because they were going to have this other government pension, for example. And so when they go to file for benefits for Social Security, if they had not paid into Social Security, then they would either not have a benefit from Social Security, or if they perhaps worked another job as well, then their Social Security benefit their Social Security benefit that they otherwise earned could still be impacted by this, you know, government work. Okay. I've only had like one or two people subject to this, so I'm not an expert on the windfall elimination provision or the government pension offset, but that the GPO is a little bit easier to understand, meaning that if you didn't pay into the system and you had a government pension, and let's pretend the government pension is $600 a month, and you also had a job that you paid into the system with Social Security, and your Social Security benefit would have been, you know, $800. There's an offset, and I don't know if it's a dollar-for-dollar offset, but it's some kind of an offset that that person may not get that full Social Security benefit. I think where it has even more impactful is when, for example, if there's a couple and one spouse was working, the higher earner, and then we have the lower earning spouse or the spouse not making as much, that spousal benefit might have been impacted as well. So if I have a couple and the one spouse didn't work at all, they are eligible for something we call the spousal benefit. It's typically around half of the higher earner's benefit. Well, if that lower earner spouse had a government pension, it might wipe out their spousal benefit. They may not be entitled to it. And here they worked. Okay, so what is happening now is the people who had a reduction or elimination of a benefit because of this windfall elimination provision, the WPE, or the government pension offset, the GPO. If you were someone who were subject to those reductions or limits, that's gone. That's been repealed. Okay, so a person who paid into Social Security for 30 years was never subject to that. You don't need to worry about that. So this Social Security Fairness Act doesn't apply to you. Don't worry about it. But for people who had worked in non-covered jobs that didn't pay into Social Security and their earnings were reduced, now that's been eliminated. It's been repealed. The WP and GPO have been repealed, and now it's time to get the word out, right? So what we understand is that Social Security will make adjustments automatically back to January of 2024. So you wouldn't necessarily have to do anything. I'm going to put a little asterisk on that. So if you were subject to that WEP, the windfall elimination provision, you shouldn't have to do anything. Social Security is going to figure it out, and they're going to, you know, give you probably a lump check for the amount that you would have been entitled to for 2024, because they're going back to January 2024. They're not going back any further than that, just January of 2024, and you shouldn't have to do anything. But the government provision, the government pension offset, the GPO, that is a bit different. And Social Security says that if a person had applied and been denied spousal or survivor benefits, so this also would apply to survivors, due to the GPO, then these applications would be revisited and benefits would be paid, also retroactive to January 2024. However, it wouldn't hurt to follow up and make sure that the adjustments are being made. The people who never applied for spousal or survivor benefits because they assumed they wouldn't be eligible for them should apply. So you might have had a spouse who thought, well, I'm not going to get it. There's this government pension offset. I'm not entitled to spousal benefits. And they never applied for the spousal benefits. Then it wouldn't automatically be, calculated for you if you never applied. So now you need to go in and make sure you've applied for those spousal benefits. All right. So with the repeal of the GPO, all these spouses will become entitled to those benefits without regard to their pension. So we do encourage those impacted to file for their spousal or survivor benefits. And if entitlement existed back to January of 2024, you should note this on your application. But again, that's as far back as it goes. So, all right. For those who previously filed for Social Security and were denied benefits because they've been partially or completely offset, Social Security said you don't need to take any action except to verify that we have your current mailing address and direct deposit information if it's been changed recently. And most people can do this online with their personal My Social Security account without calling or visiting Social Security. And you can visit Social Security by ssa.gov/my account. So ssa.gov/my account to sign in or create an account. All right. So I think that is, good awareness. If you know someone who might have been a police officer, a postal worker, a teacher from way back when there was a time when teachers didn't pay into Social Security, you want to go back and revisit that. Okay? Just because I haven't seen it as much doesn't mean, it's not out there. A colleague just told me that even his father was subject to it. So it could end up meaning something for people. Tonight we are talking about planning for the new year. I'm going to be highlighting some more information kind of somewhat related to Social Security, and that is Medicare premiums for people who received those letters in December telling you what your new Social Security benefit was with the cost of living adjustment. They typically also will tell you if you have withholdings on that, or they will tell you what your Medicare premium will be. And from time to time, you're going to get a letter that might say your Medicare premium is more than the standard rate, and you don't know why. And maybe it's the first time you're on Medicare, and you don't know the system. So I'm going to give you a couple tips of what to watch for on those letters that you're receiving from Medicare, typically in December, when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and Bob will bring it in to me. 610-758-8810. So we're talking about just planning for the new year. Lots of things to plan, of course. I'm just highlighting some of them. We just talked about the Social Security Fairness Act, which could impact, you know, anyone you might know who was in public service or, you know, worked a government job. So if you have friends who you knew were a postal worker, a teacher, or a police officer, it may impact them. And that's just a few of the kind of occupations that may have been subject to this. Now let's talk a minute about the Medicare. So Medicare, typically people who are 65 or older have, you know, go on Medicare. If you're not working, don't have other qualified health insurance coverage, you go on Medicare. There's Medicare Part A, which is hospital. We don't pay for that. But then we have Medicare Part B and Part D. Part B is your typically your, 80% coverage of your doctors and medical bills, things like that. And then Part D is prescription. And those premiums typically come out of our Social Security check. If you're collecting Social Security, you may be on Medicare and have not filed for Social Security, and you're writing checks to Medicare to pay for those Medicare premiums. So if you're already on Social Security, they automatically take it out of your Social Security check. If you're not on Social Security, then you're writing a check to pay for it. All right, so that's Medicare. And what those premiums are typically, it could be a little bit different, but I'm not going to get into why it could be a little bit different for like the standard rate. But basically, I think for 2025, we're looking at a standard rate of about $185 for Part D. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. Part B. I don't know what it is off the top of my head for Part D. But these Medicare premiums can be increased if your income goes over certain thresholds, and Medicare looks back 2 years. So for 2025 premiums, they're looking at your 2023 tax return. So if in 2025, it is the first year you're on Medicare, maybe you're just turning 65, and you were working, and now you've totally retired, your 2023 income could be much, much higher than what your income would be in 2025. And Social Security doesn't know that. They don't even have your 2024 tax return yet. So they don't know that your income has dropped. What they're looking at is your 2023 income. So if your 2023 income is $2 million, I'm making this up, but $2 million, your Medicare premium for 2025 would be about $750 a month. No, what am I saying? $628 a month. $628 a month, not the $185. That's a big, big difference. And if you're married, it applies to your spouse as well. So just look at that difference. It's a, you know, more than a, it's about $350 difference times two, times 12 months, that is quite a significant surcharge. And if you said to me, well, Lori, my income in 2023 was $2 million, but my income in 2025 is, you know, $50,000. I have no money because I'm not making any money anymore. Well, they give us an opportunity to adjust that Medicare premium. So what we call this is the income-related monthly adjustment amount. It's the IRMA adjustment, income-related monthly adjustment amount. And it's based on your income from 2 years prior. And if you get that letter in December and you're not paying attention to it, you may not see any change. And then you're going to have your 2025 Social Security payment and you're just, you don't think about it because your check gets automatically deposited and you didn't read the letter. You just threw it aside. Oh, just another letter from Social Security. And you didn't realize the impact of it. A lot of people miss the these changes. And there's a special letter application you can make to Medicare to ask them to adjust that Medicare premium based on your current year income. So, for example, I have a client who received a letter in December based on 2023 income. Their premium was going to be quite significant. Well, we know they retired in 2023. We know in 2024 and 2025 their income dropped, considerably. We file a letter. It's called an SSA-44. SSA-44. You can search for it on the internet. SSA-44. Get it right from the Social Security website. You don't need to pay anybody special to do this. And you have to let them know if you had a life event, a life-changing event. And any of the following can be that life-changing event. It could be a marriage, divorce, annulment, death of a spouse, work stoppage or reduction, and I'm going to talk about that in particular, loss of income-producing property, loss of pension income, employer settlement payment. So any kind of one of these life events could change the income on your tax return in the current year, which could impact that IRMA adjustment. So marriage could be becoming legally married, a legal marriage, it says. So that could change the threshold of income where you could qualify for a lower or, Medicare premium. Divorce, that could have a change. Maybe the spouse that you divorced was making all the money and you make less money. So you'd want to file, let them know that. Death of a spouse. With the death of a spouse, you could lose income. That could impact your IRMA adjustment. Work stoppage is the big one. So the work stoppage or reduction, you could actually have two events here. So I've had a number of clients who will be working full-time and maybe making really great money, and then they go part-time or they start doing consulting. So it's actually a work reduction, not a work stoppage. And that work reduction might take them from a higher income to maybe middle income for these IRMA adjustments. And we can request that the Medicare premiums get adjusted based on that work reduction. 2 years later, that same client might stop working completely, totally retire. I could fill out another SSA-44 to now tell Social Security, now I have a work stoppage. So it doesn't mean that you only fill this out once or you only have one chance. There could be a number of life events that one experiences that you could complete this if it's going to help lower your premiums. All right. Now, I think, though, if you tell them that you had lower income and you end up not having lower income, I think they can come back at you. But this can make quite a big of a difference when we think about the standard premium being about $185 and the top rate being $628. That is a really big difference. Well, in fact, I think it's actually like 400 and something. And if it's a couple, it's per person. So just take 400 times 2, that's 800 times 12. You're talking about $9,600 from the lowest standard rate to the highest. And it's usually somewhere in between. And these Medicare premiums, income-related monthly adjustment amounts, the income is tightened. They tightened these tiers years ago. So for a married couple, it's like $212,000. And so if one spouse keeps working, then it could certainly have an impact. $212,000, $266,000, $334,000, $400,000, $750,000. So it's a bit of a range, but kind of tight on some of those. Married filing separate people, you really get caught if you're married filing separate, because you'll have the highest rates at $106,000. And until $394,000, you get almost the highest rates. So just be careful of that as well. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back, and congratulations to WDIY on the 30-year anniversary. And I think I've been here for half of that, 15 years. So congratulations. It's a great place to be. We are talking about your, planning for the new year. And we've talked a little bit about retaining documents, getting rid of documents. We talked about the Social Security Fairness Act that may apply to some people, Medicare premiums, the IRMA. I want to just say a little bit more about that. Again, pay attention to that letter you get in December. If you think you've had a life change, you can file a letter, SSA-44. It's not for things like, oh, I had a huge gain in my stock sales. No, that's not a change. That doesn't count as a life-changing event. It's typically marriage, divorce, death of a spouse, work stoppage, work reduction. That is the one that I am typically filing for people with that, because that makes a big difference. I had mentioned loss of income producing property. Like, for example, someone might think, well, you know, I sold my rental property and so I don't have that anymore. That doesn't count, though. It says you or your spouse experienced a loss of income producing property that was not at your direction. It was not due to the sale or transfer of the property. So this includes loss of real property in a presidentially or gubernatorial declared disaster area, destruction of livestock or crops due to natural disaster or disease, loss of property due to arson, or loss of investment property due to fraud or theft. So real particular in that. And loss of pension income, meaning, you know, 1 year you had a pension and maybe the pension provider offered a buyout, a lump sum buyout of your pension, and you took it as a rollover to an IRA. Now the pension's off your tax return. You don't have that income. That happened years ago with, I forgot who it was. But anyway, so there could be circumstances like that, that you would file that. Very easy. You fill it out. It's pretty straightforward. And then you mail it to the local office. But they also give you an option of calling it in. So you can call in that information as well. And usually you have to provide some kind of evidence for the change. And so if you're calling it in, I don't know if they expect you to fax it over, so be ready to do that. If it's just a change in income, sometimes they can just verify it when you file your next tax return. So that could make a difference. All right, what else do we have to talk about that could be specific words? Catch up. Not ketchup like Heinz ketchup, but ketchup like C-A-T-C-H, catch like catch a ball. Ketchup contributions. Here's some new changes. Ears perk up. 2025, there's some significant changes. How much can I contribute? Well, this is in particular for people 60 to 63 at December 31st. So normal contributions to an employer retirement account. This is where we talk about catch-up contributions. When I'm saying catch-up contributions, I'm referring to employer retirement plans. You can contribute for 2025, $23,500. That's the normal contribution. If you're over age 50, you can do a catch-up contribution of $7,500. That's what we're used to, okay? 23,500 plus 75 is 31,000. That's what we're used to. Catch-up contributions for people over 50. But there's a new caveat this year, starting in 2025, for people who are aged 60 to 63 at the end of the calendar year, you actually can do a higher catch-up contribution, not 7,500, but $11,250. So instead of the catch-up being $7,500, it's $11,250. So that brings the total contribution for those people age 60 to 63 on December 31st to $34,750. So if you're going to be 64 at the end of this year, it doesn't apply to you. If you're 59 at the end of the year, it doesn't apply to you. You just have the regular, normal catch-up contribution of $7,500. Why these special people, I don't know. Anyone who's 60 to 63, they're giving you a little bit extra, probably to help you, you know, shore up your retirement savings. Contribution as an employee is $34,750. So beginning with the year you turn age 64, the highest limit no longer applies and it goes back to the $7,500. Okay? So that is catch-up contributions. Now, for employer-provided plans, when we look at IRA contributions, there is a limit for 24 and 2025 was $7,000. And the catch-up for age 50 or over was $1,000, bringing it to $8,000. So that's regular contributions to IRAs, Roth IRAs for 2024 and 2025. That stayed the same, $7,000 up to $8,000. The 2023 limits were lower. And I just want to remind people that for the 2024 contribution, you actually have until April 15th of 2025. Not for, you know, your employer plans, but for your IRAs, traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, you have until April 15th of 2025 to fund those for 2024. Now, why they give us that extra room is because sometimes we don't know if we're eligible to make contributions because there's income limits. So, for example, if you're going to do a traditional IRA, if you're married filing joint, and I have to use the 23 numbers because I don't have the 24 numbers in front of me. The 23 numbers for married filing joint to do a traditional IRA is, you know, phased out between 116 and 136,000. So if you make less than that, your married filing joint, you could both fund a deductible traditional IRA, even if you're participating in a plan at work. If you're married and one spouse is working and the other spouse is not, then the spouse could still do a contribution. There's a higher phase-out range for a non-covered spouse, and that in 2023 was between 218 and 228, so they give you a little bit more wiggle room there. For Roth IRA contributions, it was also that higher amount, married filing joint, 218 to 228 for 2023. So it's around that for 2024 too. Might be like 220 or something. So under those amounts, you can still fund a Roth. So the deductible IRA has lower income thresholds. The Roth IRA, because you don't get a deduction, has higher income thresholds. But there's also something called a non-deductible IRA. Could be the same IRA account you have. You just don't get a deduction for it if your income is, you know, exceeds those limits. So you could still make a non-deductible IRA contribution. What happens then, though, is you have established a basis in your IRA, a cost basis, because ordinarily when we put money into a non-deductible IRA, we don't pay tax on that money. Because eventually when it grows, we invest it, we take it out, then it's going to be taxable when we take it out because we never pay tax on the money when we put it in. But if we put money into a non-deductible IRA, I didn't get a deduction for that, then it has a cost basis, and then we have to track that cost basis. Now, if you're someone who has no other IRAs, none, you just have an employer plan and you keep putting money into this non-deductible IRA, each year you would have an opportunity to convert it to a Roth. And if you have basis of $8,000 and you convert $8,000, you're not going to pay tax on it. It's a backdoor way to get money into a Roth if your income is otherwise too high to get it. So non-deductible IRAs, no income limits. Deductible IRAs, income limits depending on if you have other employment or your spouse is not covered. And then Roth IRAs also have limits. We did have a call come in from Evelyn in Whitehall, and she said she stopped working December 31st of 2023. She only earned a small amount in 2023. She got a paper form, a paper from Social Security, but can't find it, and has been on Social Security for several years. How can she retrieve the information that was sent? Does she need a SSA 44? Evelyn, I would say if your income was as low as you indicated for 2023, then the form they would have sent you in December would not have reflected any Medicare premium adjustment. If this was your only income on your tax return, I would not expect that you would have a higher Medicare premium, because the premium for 2025 is based on the 2023 income. But Evelyn, you've brought up a great point that is going to help me clarify this a little bit for our listeners. So I thank you for calling in with this question, because I want to be clear on something. When they make the income-related monthly adjustment amount, I told you they look at your 2023 income. They're looking at your total income on your tax return and your tax-exempt income. They aren't looking at just your earned income. So, Evelyn, you said your earned income was X amount of dollars. I'm going to put out a number. I'm going to say it's $20,000. That was your earned income. But you might have had, you know, $100,000 of pension. And if you're single, then you would be subject to a Medicare income-related monthly adjustment amount, because your total income was over the first standard tier. If you're single, that's $106,000. So that's my little example. So you might have been subject to a higher amount, because you just mentioned your earned income, but you might have other income on your tax return. So people, when we're talking about looking at the income for these income-related monthly adjustment amounts, it's your total income plus tax-exempt income, okay? So Evelyn, if you wanted to retrieve it, I don't know if you have access to a computer, but you can sign up for a Social Security account on the Social Security website, ssa.gov, and you can sign up and set up an account and probably retrieve that information. Also, you might notice the change in your monthly deposit at Social Security. So the COLA adjustment, I think, for 2025 was like 2.3%. And then the Medicare premium, I think, is like $185. So you might see just a couple dollar difference in your deposit for Social Security. If you see a bigger difference than that, then you might have been someone who was subject to the change. But it may not impact you. So please look at your total income on your tax return, not just your earned income. When we talk about earned income and the impact to Social Security that so many people like would used to worry about, or they'd say, oh, I can only make so much, I can only make so much. What that is referring to is when someone files for Social Security before full retirement age, there is a payback that gets calculated. If you make more than a certain threshold, then you have to pay back some of your Social Security benefits. And I'll give you an example. Let's say that threshold is $20,000 of earned income. Different than total income, I'm talking about earned income, meaning I could have $20,000 of dividends and Social Security is not going to make me pay back any Social Security. But if I have $20,000 of or more than $20,000 of wages, let's say I have $40,000 of wages and I'm only 63 and I filed for Social Security, well, I'm going to have to pay back some of my Social Security because I wasn't full retirement age. So you want to be careful of that as well. If you're pre-full retirement age and you still work or continue to work, or maybe you're changing jobs in between, blah, 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 then you have to be aware of the earnings limit for Social Security, because you might have to pay back some of the benefits. Once you reach full retirement age, there's a funny little calculation in the year you reach full retirement age. If you started collecting let's say your full retirement age is 67 and you start and you turn 67 in July of 2025 and you started collecting Social Security in January, well, then there is a tiny bit of a payback. It's $1 for every $3 over the limit for those first 6 months. But then after that, once you reach full retirement age, you don't have to pay anything back. You can make as much money as you want. All right. So, Evelyn, I hope that helped answer your question. Go to ssa.gov if you have access to the internet. If you don't, perhaps maybe one of your kids does. Or you could call Social Security and ask them to resend that. Perhaps they would do that. Folks, we're at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on 88.1 WDIY, also available on the WDIY app as well as many streaming services. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. I wanted to give that website to Evelyn again. Evelyn, if you're listening, you have a pencil. SSA.gov, SSA for Social Security Administration, .gov for gov, /my account. So SSA.gov/my account. Lots of great information on the Social Security website. I've always found it, you know, you have to dig around sometimes, but lots of good information. So thank you for your call and question. Some other keywords in our planning for the new year. Keywords are key letters, QCD. Let's talk about QCDs for a minute. Tax-free IRA distributions. I'll talk about in just a moment because we have a caller and we're getting toward the end, so I want to make sure I can answer a question. We have Bill from Bethlehem. Hi, Bill. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Great. How can I help?
All right. So I was waiting till I turned 70 to collect Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
So at 69 and a half, which I am now, I went into Social Security last week, and just because they were right next to where I work, and they said, I said, well, explain to me why I should keep working, as kind of jokingly. And she said, well, let me look at this. And she goes, you shouldn't keep working. So it would only be a matter of $15 more a month for the next 6 months, which would be $85. I said, oh, I'm going to break. That's it then. I didn't know that. And she said, also, you can backdate 6 months,
uh-huh,
get a lower rate, which was, I believe, like $185 less. And I could collect the 6 months, I can get 6 months at $6,000. Mm-hmm. So I think I would take, and then now I didn't want to do it that day because I was loaned, I'm told I had to work 4 more months. So now it's February, so I guess I should probably just backdate 6 months and collect that lump sum money and then take less money per month, which only would be like $185.
Yeah, well, it's up to you. But yes, it's interesting to me because I've heard these stories before where Social Security tends to tell people, oh, you can file backwards 6 months. So I think they're bringing their own kind of experience into the equation. I had a client who wanted to wait till 70, went in to apply for her age 70 benefit. Next thing she knows, she got a lump sum payment. And she was shocked because she didn't want to go back 6 months, but that's what they end up paying her. And now she's in an argument with Social Security to return that and not do it. So if you don't have to work till 70 to wait till 70, you could have stopped working at 60 and still waited till 70. So there's no requirement that you work till 70. Typically, what I'll tell people is there's so many factors you have to look at when you're making these decisions. Number one, cash flow needs. Do you have cash flow needs? Number two, longevity. Do you have longevity in your family? Because there's always a break even on this. If you think that your longevity is longer than the normal life expectancy, then quite often it behooves you to wait longer for the higher benefit if you think you're going to be collecting it longer than your life expectancy. The other thing it could be planning for is a surviving spouse. Sometimes a surviving spouse doesn't have the same kind of record as, you know, the higher earner. Maybe there's not a pension or a pension goes away. So sometimes the higher earner spouse will wait till 70 to get the highest benefit possible because you are getting an 8% premium for the year on waiting, and that's monthly. So as you said, your benefit is going to be reduced a little bit permanently if you go back 6 months, because then you don't have that 6 months of that increase. So I think it's a personal decision, Bill, as to whether you say, yeah, go ahead and give me that lump sum. People will tell you there's a break even. Sometimes people will say, take it while you can get it because it's not going to be there. You know, you never know. But just know that if they go back 6 months now, then you're going to have a higher Social Security for 2025. You're going to get a lump sum. So you got to know how that's going to impact your tax return too, with that extra money on your tax return. Okay. And you're still working, right? You said?
No, I went up that next day. I went in and said, hey, I'm out. I'm going the end of the week.
Oh.
I mean, I guess it's just kind of like, oh, yeah. What? Yeah. Well, at that point, I was thinking there really wasn't much more per month for the 6 months to hang on, because pretty much it was my just ended this year would have been my last full working year.
Okay.
So then I haven't told too many people.
Yeah.
But now I'm glad. Now it's snowed. I'm a truck driver. So now that it snowed this week, I'm so happy I did.
Yeah. Well, so maybe it wouldn't hurt then for you to go ahead and get that 6 months back, you know, lump sum. I mean, because now your income for the whole year, if you're not working, you're going to have a lot less income, because your Social Security will get included in taxable income based on how much other income you have on the return. So if you only had earnings for, you know, like a week or not at all, then if let's pretend, and don't tell me any numbers, I don't like people to tell me numbers, but like, for example, my mom, she only has Social Security, nothing else. Well, she pays no income tax on that. Now, I have clients who are still working or make a lot of money on investment income, and 85% of their Social Security benefit is included in taxable income. And then there's, of course, a whole group of people that is somewhere in between. And if we put more income on their return, then more of the Social Security gets taxed. And they call that like the torpedo effect. There was someone who wrote an article in the New York Times that called it the torpedo effect. It's been around forever, and I've planned around it for clients for many years. But yeah, if you're only getting Social Security and it's not going to be taxable, then it might not hurt you. You know, look at your own cash needs and life expectancy. Oh, and your health, too, if people are fairly healthy. So.
Well, it's not my first question, because I've been listening to you for quite a few years, and you've helped me along, and
it
just went by to do this, and that's the right thing. And the other advice I got was from my wife, saying I should take the lump sum and buy or something, but I don't know about that. So anyways.
Well, good luck with that.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with that. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Yeah, these are great questions. And it also highlights that each person's situation is different. So, you know, I'm a Libra, and I always make a joke about Libras like to take a consensus and get everyone's opinion before making their own decision. And I don't think there's anything wrong with getting, you know, kind of feedback from other people and their circumstances. But you do have to make these decisions for yourself based on your own circumstances. And just watch out for, you know, how something might apply to you compared to, you know, your neighbor and things like that. So good job. Thank you for calling in with that question. So qualified charitable distributions. I do want to mention this because there has been a change to qualified charitable distributions. And this also won't apply to most people, but I do have some people that it applies to. And that is, once you reach age 70 and a half, That's the old required minimum distribution age. So 70 and a half is the old required minimum distribution age. The new required minimum distribution for most people is 73. If you're born in 1960 or later, it's going to be 75. But at 70 and a half, you can do a qualified charitable distribution out of an IRA. And the IRS says that you can do that up to a certain dollar amount. And for many years, it was $100,000. And as I said, most people don't make $100,000 distributions to nonprofits from their IRAs for, you know, that amount of money. But I've had people who have. So I do want to tell you that they have adjusted that amount now for inflation. So in 2024, the annual QCD limit is indexed for inflation to $108,000. $108,000 you can give out of an IRA and not pay any income tax on that. It's quite high. So if you have a required minimum distribution, let's pretend it's $30,000, you could do the full $30,000, you could do part of the $30,000, you could do up to $108,000. So that's something to keep in mind. That's planning for 2025. If you are someone who is charitably inclined and you might have set up your RMDs to be taken monthly, and at December of every year you make some huge charitable contribution to your favorite university, church, or radio station, then you might want to rethink that. And this is where the planning comes in. What am I doing for the year? I have this available to me now. I'm 70 and a half, or I'm 73, and I want to do charitable giving. Personally, for me, the best place to do charitable giving is out of an IRA, because that's all ordinary income to you. And once you're 70 and a half and are allowed to do it, it's ordinary income and it comes right off of page one. It's just great. Now, you have to do it the correct way. You have to contact the custodian, have them make the check payable to the charity. And then when it comes tax time and you have your tax document, you have to tell your accountant, or you have to be responsible for reducing the taxable portion of that distribution by the amount you gave to the charity. Qualified charitable distribution, you code it in the tax software, and it shows up on page one of the return, QCD, and it lowers the taxable portion. So keep that in mind. I love QCDs. I love them. If you're someone who has check writing on your IRA, you've got to be very careful, though. Those checks have to clear. So some custodians will allow you to write checks off of an IRA to your favorite charitable organizations, but those checks have to clear versus when the custodian writes the check for you. Okay, and just be aware of that. What else did I want to talk about? Exemptions, the gift and estate exemption. People are always asking me, how much can I gift? How much can I gift? Is it $10,000? Well, no. In 2025, it is now $19,000. So you can gift $19,000 to anyone, and you don't have to report anything, and they don't have to report anything. That's called the annual gift exemption. If you gift more than that, then you're required to file a gift tax return to let the IRS know that you're eating into your lifetime gift exemption. So there is something called a gift tax return that could be filed. It's very much like an estate tax return. It's called a 709. The estate tax return is a 706. But the 709 alerts the IRS that you're using up some of your lifetime gift exemption, which, when you die, could impact your estate exemption. And the estate and gift exemption for 2025 is $13.99 million, meaning I could gift someone $13 million, file a tax return, a gift tax return with the IRS telling them I'm gifting $13 million, and there is zero gift tax on that. It's only when I go over that lifetime exemption that I would have to start paying gift tax. All right, but the annual amount, we don't have to file a gift tax return. We don't have to tell anybody. We don't have to do anything. The annual amount is a nice little, amount to be able to file and give to someone and not have to file a tax return. All right, so be aware of that. Next week, I am talking about retirement planning. So I'll talk in a little bit more detail next week about different ways to save for retirement, whether it's, you know, saving in non-qualified, non-retirement accounts, IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, Roth IRAs. I like diversification. We talk about diversification in investments. I like diversifications in our buckets of where we need to draw money as well. So next week, we'll talk about retirement planning conversations. I want to thank Bob and Cindy for being here. Thank you, my callers, for calling in. Thank you, James. And thank you for your patience with my voice tonight. I apologize. But remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.